Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. You guys know me. I'm Ben. I ask our auto editor, Scott Benjamin, questions. Scott, do you feel like answering some questions today?
That's me, and I do feel like answering questions.
Great. Then we are ready to get going on this. We talked a lot about racing. I really enjoy – I've never raced in NASCAR or Formula One or anything like that, but I love watching them.
You've never been in Formula One? I thought I had you picked as a driver, but maybe not.
No, I just wear this suit and this helmet because it makes me feel better.
The Nomex fire suit? Yeah, that's good. Good luck.
I like to be prepared, Scott. I was a Boy Scout. So, but anyway – we digress. Let's go back to this race topic because what I was wondering, these are races a lot of times of endurance, right?
Well, yeah, there's a difference between endurance racing and what we're talking about
sure.
here, really. Endurance racing is, you know, maybe 12 hours, 24 hours, mm-hmm. something like that, you know, or long distances like, not that these aren't long distances, but, you know, 1,000 miles in the desert or something like that. That's usually classified as endurance racing. What we're talking about are races that can last as much as 500 miles, 600 miles, mm-hmm. Usually 250, 400 miles. That's kind of the norm. But yeah, there's a lot of, things that can go wrong in that amount of time or those amount of laps.
And as a matter of fact, we can count on at least a few things going wrong just with the strain and the stress that these vehicles are put under.
Correct. And it's not always something going wrong. It's, you know, something that maybe needs attention or something, not attention rather, but something that needs to be
replenished.
Yeah, replenished, yeah, because there are things that are designed to wear during the race. Such as tires and fuel. Mm-hmm. Of course, fuel wears, but you understand that it's used during the race. So what we're talking about then is we're talking about pit stops.
Right, because where do they go when they need
this
replenishment?
Exactly. They have to come in and perform what they call a pit stop, and this is in really basically any kind of racing. There are sprint races where, you know, this isn't necessary, but
sure.
For the most part, you know, when you're talking about a race, a NASCAR race, a Formula One race,
or IndyCar
race, you're going to see pit stops.
Yeah. Well, are they always the same pit stop?
No, they're dramatically different between all different series. Now, the idea behind them is the same, that, you know, you fix and replace and repair and, you know, do whatever you have to do.
Yeah.
There's some races where, you know, the drivers will switch if you're talking endurance racing, like we just mentioned.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There are other ones where, you know, the vehicle has been damaged and needs to be repaired quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it's just, you know, just needs fuel and tires, which is kind of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
There are adjustments that can be made. There's all sorts of things that can happen during a pit stop. The driver could come in because of, you know, they need something fixed within the car. Maybe there's, you know, an electrical failure. Maybe there's, you know, something like that happening.
Mm-hmm.
They won't pull in just because they need a drink or something like that.
Right.
But that also happens during a pit stop, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, too.
Well, I am surprised. I know, of course, I'm showing a bit of my ignorant nature here when I admit that I did not know that pit stops were different across races, and it seems as though they are. But before we really get into that, we've talked about the basics here, tires and gas, right?
Mm-hmm. Being
the basics, or fuel, I should be more correct when
sure.
I say that. My record for changing a tire, for getting out of the trunk, putting it on, putting the spare, or taking it off, putting the spare on, et cetera, mm-hmm. Is actually not too bad. It's a little bit under 9 minutes, I think.
9 minutes. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's
well,
pretty good.
I was lucky. You know, the wind was at my back that day. But surely 9 minutes is not going to cut it for changing one tire to pit stop. How fast are these guys?
Well, it depends on what type of series you're talking about, because that also is dramatically different.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. So if you're talking about NASCAR, Formula One, IndyCar, mm-hmm. all of them have different acceptable times, I guess, because, you know, you go through these eras where, you know, in the 70s, it might have been 20 seconds acceptable for, you know, this pit stop and this division, whatever we're talking about.
Seconds. 20 seconds. Seconds.
Yeah, 20, 25 seconds. That might have been fine back then, but now, you know, depends on, again, what you're talking about, but uh-huh. it could be as little as 10 seconds.
Wow. I almost got bleeped out. Said some inappropriate
long pause. And you know what? Yeah. That's not even the lowest. I'll tell you about that later.
Well, let's go. Really? Just
Yeah. They get really, really low. I mean, you wouldn't believe how fast this happens. It's really impressive. It's something to watch.
Well, we've got two options here then. How do we want to work this out, Scott? Do we want to go maybe race by race, like NASCAR, Indy, Formula One, and talk about each one, or do we want to talk about general specifics across the three?
Let's talk about each one. We'll go right down the list. And I've got them in that order. I've got NASCAR, IndyCar, and Formula One here. And we can talk about them just as we go. We can, you know, tell me whatever you want.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so NASCAR. NASCAR, you're pretty familiar with that stock car racing, right?
Yes, sir.
Seven men are allowed over the wall for NASCAR pit stop. And that doesn't mean that there are it doesn't mean that there are exactly seven people that are working on the car.
It could be three.
There are always seven over the wall. There could be even one more that's allowed over the wall during some races. It depends if the person's only going to take off the windshield cover. There's a tear off, mm-hmm. For the windshield. There are times when an eighth man is allowed, but he has a very limited role. So it's usually just seven people maintaining that vehicle during the pit stop.
Okay.
There's a jackman, two air wrench men, two tire men, a fuel man, and a catch can man, which is really working with the fuel man.
Oh, okay.
So those are the seven people. And usually a NASCAR pit stop is acceptable is around 15 seconds.
Wow.
Somewhere around there, or less than 15 seconds is preferred, of course. Now, that's just a generality. I mean, we're going to talk in general terms for all this because
sure. There's
always going to be exceptions. You know, maybe they don't give it a full shot of fuel. Mm-hmm. Maybe they only do the tires. Maybe they only do the right side tires. You know, that type of thing. There's a lot of variables in this. So we'll say just a full tires, fuel, generally takes about 15 seconds.
Wow.
Man, that's pretty good. So again, we'll talk about this also, but,
yeah.
One of the big differences is in how the vehicle is raised in the air and not just the number of people, but how the vehicle gets up in the air. Each of those three series that we mentioned has a different way of getting the vehicle up so you can get the tires off.
Now there's a jackman in NASCAR.
In NASCAR, there is one jackman.
And
he has to carry that jack over the wall, get it underneath the outside edge of the car first. Then come around to the other side, jack the car up again, and then let the car down. That's one person's job. In IndyCar, which we'll get into in a moment, there are air jacks, which are like these pneumatic, rods that drop down and push the car up straight in the air as soon as it lands in the pit. It has something to do with the fuel. It's an air-activated system.
Okay.
And so there's no jackman in Indy, and there's no device or anything that lifts it other than these pneumatically controlled jacks.
Huh.
They drop out from the bottom of the vehicle. And in F1, there's actually a front and a rear jackman, but it's kind of a different thing. It looks like almost like a hand truck or a hand dolly.
Oh, okay.
And they drive when they enter the pits in F1, the driver drives almost right into that jackman. You'll see it almost strikes the jackman, really. He's holding the jack in place. Mm-hmm. And then he quickly bends down, lifts up the front end. The person in the back has to approach the vehicle after the car stops and then insert the jack and lift it up. So there's a front and rear in F1.
I see. And the front goes up first.
All right, but I'm getting way ahead of myself.
No. I think a preview is good here.
Now, when in IndyCar, there are six people out over the wall. So it's slightly different than NASCAR. There's six versus seven.
Because there's no jackman.
There is no jackman, that's right. And the positions are roughly the same. There's a fuel person, air wrench. You know, there's a single lug on these. Instead of in NASCAR, I believe there's five lugs on each wheel. So that's quick work, you know, the real mm-hmm. fast air wrench work. In IndyCar, there's just one, a single nut. So it's a little bit faster, but again, you know, you're still taking a wheel off and putting it. Surprisingly, they're relatively close in time. An average IndyCar time pit stop is right around 10, 12 seconds. That'd be kind of a ballpark.
That's amazing.
General ballpark. It might be a little bit more, but it's still pretty fast. I mean, when you consider what they're doing.
Quick question, Scott.
Yeah.
Just for clarification, with these teams of two airmen and two tire men,
mm-hmm.
is that one airman, one tire man per side?
No, they do it. this gets confusing because when you watch these guys, they're moving so quickly.
Sure.
It's tough to tell who's where. So the two, they attack one side of the car at a time.
I see.
So they all head to the outside edge. The jackman lifts up the car. You know, they get the wheels off. They put the wheel on. One person is just holding the tire. The one person is just working the wrench only. Okay. So someone working on the front, someone working on the back. There's two sets of two guys working on the vehicle. Yeah. And then they move to the other side of the vehicle, the inside edge.
Okay.
Closest to the wall.
I see. Okay.
Now, if you want to talk about something that's incredible to watch, mm-hmm. watch a Formula One pit stop. This can have as many as – and I've tried counting this, Ben. I can't find it anywhere. Uh-huh. I've seen as many as 20 people attacking an F1 car at one time.
How do they get 20 people around it?
It seems like you wouldn't believe it. The driver drives into almost what looks like a U-shape of people, kind of like a funnel. The car, when the car hits the pit stop. So they're surrounding the car, completely surrounding the car. Hmm. Everyone has a very specific job in Formula One. Really specific. I mean, tiny little job. Not tiny. I mean, they're all important, of course.
Yeah,
but what I mean is,
they've got a very specific.
Exactly. They've got one job to do. They do it, and it's done. A Formula One pit stop can be achieved in right around 7 seconds.
Hmm.
And that's full fuel, which is electronically controlled, by the way. The fuel is predetermined before the car comes in how much they want to take in. They program it. They take out this huge filler hose mm-hmm. attached to the vehicle, and just as much as they want to goes in.
Just pop it in.
Exactly as much as they want to, because that has a lot to do with weight and how far they need to go and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So they can either conserve time by adding less fuel if they know they're going to be able to come in or make it to the end of the race,
mm-hmm.
or you know, give it a full load of fuel.
Well, let's talk about some of the irregular aspects. Of course, as we know, accidents happen, and we've mentioned this before in some of our other racing episodes. Mm-hmm. Let's say somebody gets a crack on the front area of the vehicle, or mm-hmm. something smacks in the back. That the pit stop is the time where that's fixed as well, right?
Correct. Yeah, they do this incredibly fast body work, and that's a lot of it's just quick release hardware. Mm-hmm. So they pull in. Someone knows exactly what they're going to need before they come in because they have communication with the driver, of course, you know, two-way uh-huh. radios. They know exactly what they need when they come in. They have it ready to go. As soon as it pulls in, they do that also. Now, that adds time, or they may come in just for that repair. They may not take tires at that point. They may not take fuel. It depends on what they need.
I see.
So it can be accomplished quickly. But remember, every time you're in the pits, you're losing positions out on the track.
Right.
Doesn't matter when it is. Even if it's under caution, you're mm-hmm. better to come in under caution because, you know, the field is traveling slower and you're more yeah. likely to come out on the lead lap. There's a lot of pit strategy that happens in races. In fact, a lot of races are won or lost in the pits.
That's pit strategy.
Yeah, and you'll hear that thrown around a lot yeah. on the weekends, that races are won or lost here. And in fact, it's really true. I mean, you can see it. If there's a mistake made, a lot of times, you know, the race is lost because of the pit crew. Or it could be won because of the pit crew. Not to downplay the driver's role, of course,
right,
but
right.
I'd say equally important, really.
Really?
That's, yeah.
That sounds like a high-stress occupation already.
It really is, yeah. And there can be some really bad mishaps in the pits, and there uh-huh. can also be some, you know, just fantastic things that happen in the pits. It's all about incredible precision.
Uh-huh.
If you watch them, it really is just it's like a ballet or something. I mean, they're really well timed, perfect in everything they do, and that's because they practice. I mean, they don't ever stop practicing.
Boom! You read my mind. I was going to ask. That was one of the questions. They do drills.
Oh, they do lots of drills. In fact, they practice all week long,
mm-hmm.
the day of the race. Maybe not the exact day of the race, but every day up to the race. During the race is the big show, and then they start practicing again for next week.
And kind of play, or not play, but they run contingency plans and different scenarios.
Of course, yeah. They've got to have everything ready to go. So, if you know, they practice replacing in Formula One, they may practice replacing the front nose piece.
Mm-hmm.
They may practice making, you know, adjustments, downforce adjustments to the car, uh-huh. wedge adjustments to a NASCAR, everything. They take into account everything. And one thing I should mention is that in Indianapolis, they have something called Carburation Day, which has been shortened to Carb Day recently because cars don't really have carburetors anymore.
Right. There's that.
yeah. So Carburation Day at the Indianapolis 500, I think it's usually held on the Thursday. I'm th- think is stressing my mind here, but I think it's Thursday before the race. And they have a competition for pit crews, a speed competition.
Oh,
and
wow.
This year's winner of the Indianapolis 500, which was Helio Castroneves, his team actually won the pit crew competition, which kind of says something, you know, that his team is precision. That's Team Penske, really. His team won with a time of, and I believe it was just under 8 seconds. It's like 7.98 seconds or something like that. Extremely fast, and that's fuel and tires.
Man.
So you're talking like 8 seconds, but that's, you know, running in a competition. That's not a real race scenario. Mm. So I'm assuming that a race average time now is right around the 10-second mark. You know, that's probably about average.
And it could be, because this really is a situation where milliseconds might make a difference.
They truly do, yeah, because, you know, if they leave the pit just a second too late, or, I mean, a half a second too late, or, you know, even less, they risk, you know, losing a spot out on the track.
Let's go back to something we mentioned earlier, but we didn't really examine, talking about if the driver needs a drink or something like that. Does that happen in the pit stop?
Yeah, it does. And the funny thing is, like, you know, we mentioned that, you know, there are X number of men allowed at the walls, you know, 7, 6, whatever, 16. There's often, you'll see someone with a pole, like a long extension pole. And sometimes they'll have a cool drink on the end of that pole that they can hand to the driver through the window, yet not go over the wall. So it's kind of a way of getting around that rule, really.
Yeah.
Or they may have a squeegee that, you know, they can clean the window with. Or they can remove debris from the front end of the car, so, you know, it improves aerodynamics. There's a lot they can do to kind of get around this, and they do, which is I think it's interesting. It's you know, innovative, I guess.
And it's allowed too.
It is allowed.
As long as they're not over the wall.
It's not playing dirty at all or anything. Yeah. That's just, you know, here's a safe way to hand the driver a drink.
Yeah.
You know, that type of, and the driver usually just crumples up the cup and throws it out the window and they're gone.
I've got to ask you, I only have two more questions.
Mm-hmm.
First of these, do we know how people become pit crew?
Well,
operatives?
Well, yeah, I think they're actually training. I mean, of course, they're mechanics.
Yeah.
Trained for that type of thing. You know, either the race team, you know, recruits them or somehow they, you know, come in contact with one another. And then you're not going to be a pit crew member right away, of course. You would have to go through extensive training. I mean,
sure.
I would guess, and I'm just guessing, but you may not be the man over the wall the first year. Maybe the next year after you train and train and train, because they're not going to have somebody on the team that, you know, on that team that makes that much of a difference in the race results right away, you know, because there could be mistakes made no matter how much confidence they have in you. It'd be pretty rough, to be put in that position too, I think.
Yeah. And if you look at it from that way, it really makes sense. I'm guessing here as well, Scott, but just my assumption would be that there's another team of people behind the wall who are prepping everything for the crew that goes over the wall.
Oh, there are extra men. I don't know if it's another complete team.
Right.
But, there are extra people that are working behind the scenes that you don't really see that, you know, they're back there. They're part of the team, but they're doing the kind of the behind the scenes work.
So for our listeners who might be interested in joining up with a pit crew, with Team Penske, the number one in the game right now, one of the things they might want to consider is, making a real continual effort at it, because you're probably not going to get over the wall right away.
Well, that's pure speculation on my part.
Sure,
on my part, too. But, I mean, I just can't imagine them putting a relative novice over the wall at Indianapolis,
Enormous responsibility.
Yeah, exactly.
Nerves of steel. You have to be incredibly fast.
Yeah.
You have to basically be like the Flash with an air ring.
Extremely physically fit as well, because, I mean, you're throwing those tires around and you're running. And I mean, you watch them as they go around the vehicle. They're practically laying sideways. They're cornering so hard on their shoes, you know, as they get around the vehicle.
Yeah.
These guys are athletes. They really are.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, they're mechanic athletes.
You know what? If I was on a pit crew, I think I would be good as either the front jackman on the Formula One, or maybe the guy who gives the drinks on a pole.
Talk about nerves of steel. You gotta let the Formula One car come right at you and almost, well, come, it hits you, really.
Hey, man, we live on the edge on this show. What about you? What would you do?
I think Formula One, just because I like to be in IndyCar, too. I mean, I like the open wheel stuff. I'm not so much, the stock car.
Yeah.
That's just not me. I'd much rather be the open wheel.
You'd much rather be driving.
I, you know, and because I've spent so much time. I've lived in Indianapolis for a long time, and I've been around that race so often that that might be my choice, Indianapolis.
And that's a pretty good choice there. So we probably wouldn't run into any competition.
That's right.
Well, I guess if our listeners want to learn some more about the races, they can check back on our earlier episodes. We've got the Car of Tomorrow.
Sure, I blog about racing all the time on my blog post every day on the homepage. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of information out there on our site available.
And thanks so much for tuning in and giving us a listen. We hope you enjoyed it. If you have any ideas or suggestions for future topic, please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.